This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. You're listening to Baseball Outside the Box, and I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Thanks for joining the show. This is the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. To all our new listeners, welcome. We're glad you're joining us. And to our loyal listeners, we really appreciate you being part of the show all every week. And we want to thank everybody and hope that you will all go to iTunes and Stitcher, give us a review. That really helps us, get the show out there. Okay. Now we'll continue our series this week with major professional hitters. We are excited. We're going to talk about all kinds of different topics. And our guest today is a good friend, and he's been in baseball a long time. He's currently just become the Cubs' new hitting coach. What a great position. He's not a stranger to the Chicago Cubs. He was with the Cubs for many years. And Anthony Iposi returns back to the organization. He was a minor league hitting coordinator from 2013 to 2015. And he was the roving hitting coordinator also for the Blue Jays. He was a hitting coach at the big league level for the Texas Rangers for several years. And he has worked with, as you all know, many, many great major league hitters. We don't have to go through them because Cubs have a lot of great hitters. Texas had them. But Anthony was also an 11-year minor league player with the Brewers and the Marlins. He played independent ball. He's coached. He's worked with all levels of the game. You name it, from young kids. He does camps around the country. He's a speaker, a well-known speaker that gets asked to go all over the U.S. and also internationally. So without further ado, I want to get right into it because this is going to be a great, great talk. I want to welcome my friend Anthony Iposi. Anthony, how you doing, buddy?
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me on. Good to be back.
Well, you know what? And you're right. I didn't mention that on the intro. This is your second time on the show, and we really appreciate it because between the Texas Rangers, you know, I know you've been extremely busy, and now getting, you know, what I think, you know, is one of the best jobs in professional baseball, the major league hitting coach for the Chicago Cubs. Of course, I'm biased being from Chicago and having a paisano on the show, another Italian, that makes me even more proud. So I got to tell you, first thing I want to do is congratulate you on a super, super job. And I know the Cubs know you already. You've been with them.
Appreciate it, man. Excited to get going right now. Just touching base with everybody each day. You're talking to somebody, whether it's a coach or front office or a player. So, kind of baby steps getting back into it.
You know what? And that leads in perfectly, man. You led me right into the next question I want to ask is I want to get into a little bit about, you know, with any team, you know, you've been a minor league coordinator, you've been, you know, major league hitting coach. With any team, when you first come on board, you know, this could help coaches, you know, all over the world, all over, you know, U.S. at any level that happen to get a new job or maybe start with a new program or maybe you're just developing a brand new program. Where do you start? Where do you, Anthony Iposi, start with, you know? You know, I know some of the hitters already know you, but where do you begin?
Yeah. I think with this job, it's the first job I've gotten in coaching and professional baseball that you're going back to something familiar, which is pretty awesome. So you're usually going in with the Rangers, going in my first time with the Cubs, going in with the Marlins and the Blue Jays. You're just establishing relationships and people who are going to help you through or how you can help establishing contact with the players and staff members in front office. But with this particular job, it was, you know, once I got the job with the Cubs, it was just straight up, you know, like high fives with everybody and welcome back and good to see you again. So all that you could just bypass and get involved of what we need to do to help this team win a World Series as the group together. But I think the things that people forget, like, you know, hitting, the first thing everybody talks about, we talk about it all the time. The first thing is is you got to fix this and you got to fix that. And that is not the case at all for me as a coach. It's getting to learn what the players are working on, what the organization wants. Today's society is so hard because everything is now, you know, a kid goes to do lessons and it's constantly just, okay, this is wrong, and this is what you need to do to get better. So we're constantly fixing the swing, but we also have to work on how to get hits. And with this, it's, you know, it's a team thing. It's an individual process, but it's how do we get as many individuals and what they work on to help the team win.
And for everybody out there, so you know, I mentioned a little bit in the intro, you know, Anthony's worked at all levels, and that's what makes him unique. I think, you know, going back in my history, what really helped me was working with young players at early ages really helped me working with the older players. And Anthony, what I love what you said was, you know, right away, what everybody wants to do is fix it. You know, we're going to get into that. What I love about the Cubs organization is that the culture's really good from the top down. Give us an idea. And I know, as I mentioned to my audience before, the major league level, there's certain things that, you know, if we get into some deep things, you may not be able to discuss everything because some things are competitive and, you know, we don't want other clubs to know about it, obviously, and that's understandable. But give us an idea, where does the philosophy of the teaching come down? Does everybody get together? Do you get together with, you know, the GM, the other people, all your hitting coaches? How does that work?
Yeah, you know, when I was a hitting coordinator, that was first priority is creating a culture with the field coordinator, who was Tim Cousins at the time, pitcher coordinator Derek Johnson, who's now with Cincinnati Reds,
mm-hmm.
Jose Flores, mm-hmm. who is the infield coordinator, who was now the first base coach with the Phillies. And we would all get together with, you know, the front office, Jason McLeod, Jared Madison, Jed Hoyer, Theo Epstein, and talk about what Brendan Hyde, who's now the bench coach, was the farm director when we started all this 2012-13. It was just kind of, how do we get everybody on board? And anybody who's not on board, we have to figure out how to get them on board, or we have to move forward and get more people who are interested in getting the Cubs to help win a World Series. So it sounds easy, but it's really not, because there's so many people involved in the baseball organization now. There's so many minor league coaches. It's one of the few sports that when you draft a player, they're not going directly to the manager or the pitch coach or hitting coach. They're going through four or five hitting coaches. So one of the things in an organization, you have to make sure that the hitting philosophy or the pitching philosophy or whatever we believe in, the standards that we uphold as being a Cub, is taught throughout from the time they get in all the way through, and what's going to be expected of them when they come to the big leagues. And all we're expecting the players that when they come to the big leagues is, you know, I'm not asking guys to lead the league in hitting or homers or on base, is to how to manage your at-bats, how to have quality at-bats, how to grind in the batter's box, do what the game is asking you to do, and, you know, just trying to relieve the pressure off the player, because when players get there, they want to stay, and sometimes that affects the way they hit or they pitch or they field. So the thing that we stress first is how important it is to be a Chicago Cub and what it means. And working your way through the system and always believing that you're going to be a part of something bigger than yourself, which is winning a World Series. And everything, once they start believing that, everything, you're going to take a lot of grounders. You're going to hit in the cage forever. So your swing should always improve. But you also, from the physical side, but from the mental side, you always got to be mindset-wise, always constantly thinking about winning as well as developing as well.
Well, you know, I was reading an article recently where you mentioned, you know, executing, you want to develop executing a run-scoring culture. Give our audience an idea, you know, because you mentioned a few of the items just now. Give it an idea about the run-scoring culture. What does that look like? Because, you know, you see a lot of talk about, you know, hitting home runs. You see a lot of talk about a lot of strikeouts, obviously, in the major leagues right now. What's the game plan that you guys kind of set for your club?
That kind of started in 2014. One of our outfielder coordinators and base running coordinators, Lee Tinsley, had left to go to the Cincinnati Reds. So I did, as a group, we did the base running in the minor leagues together. We didn't have that coordinator spot filled. So we kind of did it together. And being involved on the hitting side with the hitting coaches, those are the coaches that were doing the base running. You know, we were just talking about how it's more than just hitting. Everybody talks about run scores as being hitting, but it's you know, it's running the bases correctly. It's making turns. It's reading balls in the dirt. It's knowing who your outfield is. It's basically how to teach guys to be offensive as a group, as young as we can, then them just worrying about their own swings and hitting. So you're trying to create this run scoring culture we kind of came up with, to where it's hitting and base running together. It's being smart and aware on the bases and being aggressive, getting good pitch to hit. It's just a combination of everything. You know, anytime you see a runner get thrown out from the outfield out of base, just barely bang, bang, I always think the runner could have been safe because he could have cut the corner better. He could have anticipated better. He could have got a better secondary. And all those things cost you runs. Being smart on the bases, knowing when to steal bases, not getting picked off, understanding what's going on in the game. That's all part of your offense. It's scoring runs instead of just thinking about homers or slug. You know what I mean? So just incorporating that run scoring to get them understanding that when you get on first, as soon as you hit the ball, your job is to get around the home plate as fast as you can. So the team who scores the most runs wins. The more wins you have, the better chance you have to win the World Series. So that's what the run scoring culture is. It's kind of ingrained as soon as they come in.
You know, I love to hear that because, again, being a Chicago guy, I watch the Cubs a lot, and I love Joe Maddon, the way he does things. And you can tell, you know, they're very aggressively smart. They're very good base runners. You know, so it's a lot of fun to watch. Now, where does this all begin? Because, you know, let's take, you know, I realize that, you know, guys are hitting in the off season, then it comes in the spring training. When you get into spring training, where do you start there? Does it start with batting practice? Is there certain things that you might do in batting practice to start developing all this?
Yeah, there's different things you do. I mean, it starts with a basic sit down, you know, and talking to the group. And then putting it on the group, hey, what kind of standards do we want our team to have to score runs? And you kind of let the players dictate it a little bit, right? Because it makes them accountable to each other, right? The more accountable players you have to each other, the more they'll call each other out and they'll be together on it, you know? The more they'll realize, hey, this isn't good enough. We got to get better at this. So, you know, then it starts with spring training. You know, you get 6 weeks. There's different things. You know, you have so much time to work on stuff. So it's not necessarily in batting practice. It's more like, you know, what you get with Joe or you get with bench coach Brandon Hyde and what we want to do today. And you have a separate station or a field you can do things with, do situational hitting, you know. But it's more of practicing it, but it's more of really having that mindset. Because even though you're practicing it, whether you set up the machine to 90 miles an hour or you have somebody throwing it, it's still way different in the game, you know, when that runner's on third base. So it's more about learning how to handle that situation, calming yourself down in the box, understanding what the pitcher has, knowing what you do. So all these things, and how do you remember to sustain success in those situations? Because guys practice it all the time and still can't do it. You know what I mean? So it's more of creating that mindset in the box and what are you going to do in this moment. The only thing that matters in the moment is you squaring up this ball and getting that runner in from third base. So you're constantly trying to embed that in their mind each day to where it ends up in their practice, where you don't even have to talk about it. They just start doing it on their own.
Now, when a hitter all of a sudden goes through all that and then comes the season and he gets into the batter's box, is there a thought process that goes into the batter's box? Is every hitter different? I know you guys have a lot of statistics you can utilize at, you know, at your disposal, but what's a good way for our coaches? Let's put it this way, for our coaches around the world and you know, in the U.S. that are coaching players at different levels, you know, to teach players what to do when they get to home plate.
I think what coaches around the world don't get to see is the process before the game. The things these guys do to prepare themselves. And each guy is different, you know, because let's face it, you get in the batter's box, it's you. And we talked about this before. Hitting is the most selfish thing in team sports, right? Nobody's passing you the ball. Nobody's passing you the puck. There's no football plays. It's just, you know, you may have a hit and run or a button. That's it. It's up to you to control your thoughts in the box and your swing in the box on what you swing at, right? It makes it sound easy, but it's incredibly, incredibly hard because you're alone. So throughout the day, these guys do different things. You know, we talk about in the cage, they'll ask what the pitcher has. They'll watch video on the pitcher with runners in scoring position. We have statistical information, and it's how to filter that stuff to the players so that they are not overwhelmed, to where they're looking at so much information and they get in the box and they step in and they go, okay, 2-1, he throws this, 3-1, he throws that. We don't want them thinking that type of stuff. We want to be able to know what the pitcher has, what he can throw for strikes. And also, I think we have to remember, like, what the player's strength is, right? So we're teaching players to look for pitches where their swing plays and their strength. So two strikes, and two strikes, you just got to really battle your butt off and surrender a little bit and find a way to just square it up. But sometimes we get so consumed with the pitcher has, we forget about we do good. It's just such a unique balance. So it starts throughout the day when guys are preparing. Some guys are different. Some guys want to know, hey, what is he throwing runners in scoring position? Or certain guys want to go, what's he throw? Oh, they want to jump on him early. Or, hey, what does he throw at 3-2? Does he throw a lot of off-speed stuff? So we provide all that stuff for them. Again, even though you have all the information, it's baseball. I mean, it could change in a heartbeat that game. You know, he could be 70% slider 3-2, and all of a sudden throws a fastball and freezes up the guy. So you still have to remember that it's baseball and nothing is really ever 100%.
Yeah, Anthony, let me ask you, what in all your, you know, playing times, your career with coaching, as far as hitters, what do you see, what makes the real good hitters as good as they are?
The things we can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for people to believe that because you can't see it. You know, it's like using the Force in Star Wars. It's hard to believe it, but, you know, Yoda and those guys are the best Jedi. So the things that we can't see, and the inside, the competitiveness, the heart, the grind, what they work on, how they work on it, what they think about themselves, how they carry confidence, and all that stuff you can't quantify. You know, everything in baseball is statistical, analytical, but we can't quantify how a person's thinking. But when you go around, and I've been fortunate enough, you know, as a hitting coordinator in two organizations, to go around and talk to every hitter in the organization, and what you find is the best ones don't necessarily have the best swing, right? They have holes. They know what they can and can't do good. They're open to that. They admit it. They're okay, I'm not very good at this, so I'm gonna work on it, but I still have to work on my strengths. Where some other guys, you have panic, they overwork, they overload, they overprepare, they lose trust. They don't trust their practice. The best players, what they do is they trust their practice, and they respond quicker in the game than making out. So if you have an approach or a plan at the plate, and you're constantly changing it and changing and changing, that's why guys get frustrated. It's not because they get out. It's because they didn't trust themselves. But when you watch the better players, they make an out, they come back, they go, okay, that approach didn't work. I learned from it. I move on faster. And that is the ultimate separator.
All right. Now, you've mentioned several times, so I want to talk about it briefly, about, you mentioned grind out at bats. You know, I think we all understand what that means, but what does it really mean? What does that hitter look like when he's grinding out in a bat?
I think when people talk about it, they think about, okay, two strikes, grind it out, you know, choke up, shorten up, mm-hmm. try to get the ball in play, you know, foul some pitches off, spoil it, just make the pitcher work harder, right? I think it starts 0-0, right? Because hitting is hard. I mean, let's face it, the pitches out there are ridiculous. It's the hardest they've ever thrown. It's the most breaking balls they've ever thrown in the history of baseball. We're seeing the starter less and less. We're seeing bullpen guys in the fifth inning throw 95, 100. I mean, we saw it with Houston and Oakland all year with their bullpen and Anaheim. So when you're grinding, the grind starts 0-0. Like, you cannot take off a pitch in the big leagues or any league if you want to be great. I mean, 0-0, mm-hmm. I'm ready. I'm looking for a pitch. I'm anticipating. I'm visualizing it. I'm seeing it happen before I get in the box. So the grind is within the self, you know. And then, you know, the grinder comes from what? Like hockey. It's a hockey term. It's that guy who comes off the bench and does whatever the team needs you to do. And that's how hockey called that guy a grinder. And that transformed into baseball and other sports. So baseball is that same thing. It's that guy who works hard, but it's also we could use that term in the batter's box, man. You just, when you get the two strikes, you get to 0-2 and you don't get a hit, but can you get a couple more pitches to make that pitcher work to 2-2, to 3-2? Can you grind out a 2-0 curveball and lay off it in the dirt where you're not overzealous and try to jump to the pull side and you end up pulling off and grounding out. That's grinding. 2-0 is you have a leverage count, but it's, you know, it's still not easy to hit the ball. They're mixing it up so much. So grinding is just kind of giving everything you have for the team and understanding the situation and understanding yourself and what the team needs at that moment.
You know, and you also mentioned situational hitting, and I know it, you know, it sounds very common as a word, and a lot of coaches understand what that means, but I really want to get into it a little bit, because does that also mean when you're in batting practice at a certain point in spring training or prior to the season, are we talking about, you know, working in counts, situations, you know, putting players in certain situations to, you know, to be able to get key hits? Are we placing them in those situations in spring training?
Sure, you can do that in spring training where you have runners on the bases, where you're working it together and you're just doing rounds of situations, not necessarily in normal batting practice, but in a, you know, like today they're going to do situational hitting, infield in or infield back, or runner on second base, two outs, you know, getting your pitch or understanding they're going to pitch around you, maybe walk you to the next guy. So you're talking about that stuff, but a lot of stuff that, you know, they could do that in the cage as well. You know, you could do count hitting in the cage. We've done that in the minor leagues and the big leagues, just to get their mindset on what they want to hit and what they're looking for in certain situations. Do I need to elevate? Do I need to get the fastball down here? You know, you could give examples. Okay, this is a guy who throws at the top of the zone, high spin rate fastballs, trying to get on top of it, or you're trying to get the ball down the zone a little bit. You know, and then you just kind of mix up the pitches. And again, it's not as even when you have the machine throwing 90 miles an hour or whatever it is, and you have these exploding sliders off the machine. Again, there's nothing that prepares you. Hitting is one of the few sports that you're not practicing hitting exactly as you would in a game, because you're not facing a live pitcher every day in batting practice. Mm-hmm. You know, so every other sport, you're able to do that stuff. Basketball, hockey, football, whatever it may be, soccer, you're all intense. So you try to get them as close as you can to the game, whether that's bullpen stuff, whether that's, you know, machine, slider, velo, velocity type things, short pitch velocity, thrown sliders, tracking, all these things to help the player get confident. So when they get in the game, they can just kind of ease that anxiety.
Absolutely. And, you know, something that I've always wanted to ask, because I've read about it in the paper and stuff. And, you know, when a player first comes to the major league level, and this can, you know, be related to a lot of levels, but when he first gets to the big league level, is there a certain point or a certain at bats that you guys look at and say, you know, now we know exactly, you know, where he's at? Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, some of these young guys coming up that have got, you know, some big names, and it's their first year in the big leagues. It's a lot of pressure, and, you know, maybe they don't do what, I mean, they have a couple hundred at bats, you know, and they don't have that many at bats. And how do you judge where they're at, and how long does that take?
Oof, everybody's different. And that's the kind of political answer, I guess, that we all give, because you've seen guys who, hey, this guy's coming up here for a couple of weeks, he's going to fill in, and he never went back and got 10 years in the big leagues. And then mm-hmm. you have guys who are like, oh, hey, here's the guy, he's the top prospect. And then, you know, he has a lot more pressure that he applies to himself, and then he only gets a couple of years in, and he's a, you know, a 4A, AAA up and down guy. So the things that we look for is not necessarily their hits, but how they handle their outs, how they handle themselves in the dugout. Do they take it out to defense? Are they smart on the bases? So it's not necessarily about about getting hits. It's about the at-bat. Is he overmatched? Is he pressing? Is he relaxed in the box? If he's relaxed and he's putting together good at-bats, which means, you know, he's not punching out, he's not chasing, you read his body language, then you feel better, and you're like, okay, this guy's going to be okay. The more we put him in, the more he's gonna help the team win. So when these guys come up, you're just trying to make them feel comfortable, because they've never been there, right? So this is their – some guys come up and they have the mindset of, wow, this is my dream job. This is exactly where I'd be. I totally fit in. And then the other guys go, oh, my gosh, this is my dream job. Like, I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to – and all the I don't want is plays into your swing, right? It plays into you chasing. It plays into you swinging and missing. So it's just, how do we make them feel comfortable? How do the teammates make the player, other players come in and feel comfortable? And then once you see them comfortable and confident, then you know those guys are going to be okay. So it's more of a body language mindset judge thing than actually a result hit swing thing.
Yeah, I love how you said that, you know, as far as even how you handle outs, because, you know, a lot of young players, you know, they make an out, they're down, you know, they go back in the dugout. The first thing they do is ask, you know, what I do wrong.
Talk about that
a little bit when in the dugout, because I think that's important. When players come back in the dugout, what's the discussions going on between maybe players and also between the, you know, the hitting coach and the players, if there are any?
You try to get that out of them in the minor leagues, because everything is so swing oriented in today's game. So the swing in the game is probably third or fourth, you know, that you should go through the list. Was like, if they come in the dugout and they're asking about their swing, well, why did you come out of your swing? The first, is it a ball or a strike? You know what I mean? Like, that's mm-hmm. what we're looking for. Like, you, I think as a coach, you got to put it on them and ask them, like, was it a ball or a strike? No, it was a ball. Okay, well, that's why you pulled off. That's why you opened up. That's why you got underneath, though. That's why you swung over it too much, you know? Did you execute your plan? Did you trust it? No. Okay, well, that's the reason why you got jammed. You let it get too deep. Were you were trying to go to right field on this one as a right-hander. You let it get too deep. Okay, that's fine. Now we just inch out our contact points. You know, so you're trying to get them to find a way to, one, find a positive, because hitting is so negative. And mm-hmm. everybody always wants to go, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong? So a lot of the times it's more of hit it out in front more, maybe let it travel a little bit more, be directional with the fastball on the field. And the better hitters, what I've learned in talking to them, is they're willing to sacrifice a game of at bat, maybe not getting a hit, for something that they're trying to work on for the good of the rest of the season. You know, they're willing to make outs for that game as long as they get the feel or the result as far as where they're hitting the ball in the zone or on the field, rather than just freak out about not getting hits.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the last episode, I know we delved into a little bit about movement patterns, you know, the movements of the swing and everything. Mm-hmm. Just want to ask one question on that. When, you know, because you have high speed cameras and you have a lot of video at your disposal, when you identify a particular area that a player, his movement patterns are not, you know, in coordination, what's the first step you take into correcting that?
Your presentation to the player is not just, hey, you know, you need to do this to your swing. With the technology we have and the information we have, it could be a full out cool presentation. So you could break, you first thing we would do is show the video,
mm-hmm.
Show them their numbers and how, you know, how, what things we can improve on, what things we need to work on, how we could be more efficient in your swing, right? How can I keep my barrel in the zone longer and be able to hit when I'm not on time? Everybody talks about being on time, but, you know, you ask these guys, the pitches mix it up so much, they're perfectly on time, 20% maybe. Mm-hmm. So how do I hit when I'm early? How do I hit when I'm late? How do I keep my barrel in the zone to where I can hit out in front, where I can get jammed and get hits? So it's a, you know, to sit down with the coaches or, you know, front office and go, this is how we're going to present this, and understand that you may have to go backwards before you go forward if it's that deep into it, as far as the swing efficiency and some things that players have gotten away from. I think a lot of times players work on stuff in the winter and they want to improve, and that's our fault as athletes and coaches, is we want to improve so much that sometimes we improve on our weakness. We lose our strength of what got us to the big leagues, you know, from an early age at 7, 8 years old. So it's teaching them to use the video, but not drown yourself in it to where you're forgetting about how to play the game, which is kind of happening a little bit anyway, just in the amateur side and starting at the lower levels of all the academies out there today. So we still have to teach them how to play the game and what's going to work and swing efficiency as well.
You know, and I hear that a lot now, you know, let's talk less, let's do more, let's get, you know, work on the results. you know, it sounds like you got to be a mental coach. You've got to be, you know, you got to understand video. And we also want to get into, and I realize, as I mentioned in the show before and also other shows, we can only talk about certain things when it comes to technology. But maybe if you can, give us an idea, technology, science, statistics. What do you use the most to help you as a hitting coach and help your players when it comes to technology? Is there something particular?
Yeah, I don't, it's just kind of everything, you know, it's mm-hmm. not one specific thing. I think you have a routine as a coach before you get to the field, like, or when you get to the field, how you do it. Do you sit down and watch video at bats from the night before, which I'll do with certain guys, but by myself or with the other coach, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll talk to the R&D guys or our advanced scouting guys. And, you know, this is, hey, can we look up this? Or they'll give me information and I'll kind of look at it and go, okay, yes, or maybe not, or I'll just keep it to myself. Because you just don't want to present everything to the player. You want the stuff. Sometimes you have to wait a player out and for him to come to you. And when he does, you got to be ready, you know? So you just can't get caught off guard. So it's a little bit of everything. Some guys, you know, want certain information. Some guys don't want any. Some guys want video. Some guys don't want it. They just rather talk about it and feel it and do a lot of drill work. So it's a combination of what you think is important in that order, but every hitting coach today is using any type of information they can, because the players that are coming up now are being exposed to it. I mean, it's all over TV. You have players come in and, hey, I was watching YouTube last night and I saw this drill. So you got to be on your toes to be ready for anything with today's hitter.
Well, you know what? And that's going to lead us into some fun stuff to close off the show. We've got about, looks like 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. And I want to get into it right away now because it's the thing that's out there. And I think coming from somebody like yourself, you know, who's worked with young players, who's worked with major league players, who studied the game of hitting and the game in general, you know, you've heard it on television a lot. Everybody talks about launch angles, and I believe science and launch angles can be used for a benefit. But I really want to get your opinion on that. You know, what exactly is launch angle? How can it be beneficial to young players so they're not thinking that they always have to try to hit home runs every pitch?
Yeah, I won't get into like the specific degrees or anything like that. But even, you know, even as when I started coaching with the Marlins in 2006, even, you know, working with John Maley and at his batting facility, you know, for 7 years side by side, we're really close friends. Before the science that would be able to show the angle, I mean, guys were constantly working on that all the time. You know, they were working on how to be more efficient, it's not a launch angle swing. And I think that gets misinterpreted. It gets misunderstood. It makes guys swing up too early in their swing. It makes them susceptible to a ton of breaking stuff and pitches that are moving and cutting and sliding. So it's still about being direct to the ball. And the barrel is always going to be underneath your hands. Never in the history of baseball has the barrel above the hands made contact. But that's just a thought to maybe get me through the zone.
Sure.
And with certain players, you have to tell them, swing down, swing level, swing up, you know, stay inside, hit the ball out in front. Like you, because it's a different thought for each guy. If me and you take 10 coaches and we do a little clinic and we go, okay, what does inside the ball mean and what does it look like? You're going to get 10 different answers. If we say hit the ball out the front and what does contact point out in front look like, you're going to get 10 different answers. Mm-hmm. So with launch angle, I think it just gets misunderstood. It's learning to get in your lower half, right? How to use your legs and how to hit the ball out front and stay through the ball longer so I can get backspin to the pull side. I mean, that's basically what it is. But and you're not necessarily – you're working on it in the cages and everything, but I'm not trying to hit cage bombs all the time. I still have to learn square balls up and what the situation does for me. If this pitcher has sink and run, do I have to get my swing a little bit lower to get on plane and stay through the ball and drive this ball up the middle right center if I'm right-handed? If this guy's throwing, you know, 88 miles an hour fastballs out to the top of the zone, which seems to be working the biggest because a lot of guys were underneath the ball, we got to learn to be a little bit more direct and flatter to the ball and be able to hit that out in front and still be able to launch it in the gaps. Your goal is to hit a hard line drive on the outfield grass. If you get underneath it a little bit and you stay through it and you hit it out front, it's going to go. But there's a lot of hits out there on the grass, you know. And there's times where major league hitters will come up to me and tell me, "Look, I'm hitting four grounders to the opposite base," you know, just to get the feel, because they feel like they're out in front, they're chasing. It's like, today I'm just hitting four grounders. And they end up usually getting a hit the other way, and then they feel themselves getting back. And then also with launch angle, it's learning how to take chances out front in those counts, and still getting your pitch to hit. I mean, I think the strikeouts have gone up every year. You know, I remember doing a presentation since 2005. It's gone up almost every year, except one of the years it stayed even. But it doesn't seem to be stopping. We have more strikeouts than hits, which is incredible. Again, the pitching is not easy. The starters are coming out of the game early, and the guys in the bullpen. We have more guys throwing, you know, 95 to 100 than ever in baseball. So there's going to be more punch outs just because of that.
Sure.
But with launch angle, it's not. Remember, when the term launch angle, the word swing is not involved in that. It's an angle of the ball off your bat and the degrees of that and the velo off the bat and what it looks like. So how you get there, I mean, there's so many different players, and you hear about these players who say, yeah, I want to get my launch angle up and stuff like that. But when you look at the history of their career and they're able to learn to pull the ball and get power in the big leagues, the history of the career is they learned how to hit in the minor leagues. They learned how to get hits. They learned how to use the whole field. You know, so they come up, and then now they learn and really how to pull the ball out of the yard. And that's just experience, you know, through trial and error. So, you know, for us, it's really learning when we get young guys in. It's like we need to go line to line with line drives. We need to use the whole field. We got to be able to compete with two strikes. And then as the hitter starts to mature, then we start talking about, okay, let's start popping some balls out of the yard, start wearing out the gaps a little more. But the launch angle is not a launch angle swing. It's just the angle of the ball coming off the bat to the pull side.
You know, and that's what I love about Anthony Iposi and John Mailey, who's currently with the Philadelphia Phillies, was with the Chicago Cubs. You know, you guys know how to explain it in a simple manner, in a well-organized manner. And I know that's very clear to our audience. And I just hope we get the message out there. And I'll tell you why, because just recently I was in Cuba, just got back a week ago, did a coaching seminars. You know, in Latino Americano Stadium with over 60 Cuban coaches, and you're not going to believe it, but, you know, they don't get a lot of technology, and because of the internet and all that. And the one question that came up was launch angles. I almost fell off my chair, you know, because, you know, the Cubans have some great players, and, you know, but that's how it's getting out there, because young kids in Cuba are also thinking launch angle and thinking that they got to get underneath the ball to hit home runs all the time. So thank you for clearing that up. And then we're going to get into another topic, Anthony, which is another, I don't know if you want to call it a hot topic or, but that's the question of whether it's minor league players. And I know that's where you're working at it. But when you get to the big league level, you've got these shifts going on, and a big question you read about, whether it's in the paper or MLB Network or you listen to coaches, why can't major league hitters hit the ball where the guys aren't? And I want to really get your explanation of this, because I know there's a very good one.
Here's the explanation. Hitting is hard. And the game has changed, especially in that era where guys were popping 60 homers, you know, 160 RBIs, and 70 homers. That generation of kids is now in the big leagues, you know. So you learn how to hit by emulating players on TV, anything you do, right? You're going in the backyard, you're going in the street, you're emulating your favorite players and what they do. So, you know, this generation grew up watching guys hitting 60, 70 homers at the time. So, you know, our generation or my generation grew up watching, you know, George Brett, Don Mattingly, guys who used the whole field, hit 350. That was like one of the best things to do, right?
Yep.
And the dynamic changed. The homer has come into play. So guys want that money. The guys who make the most money usually hit the most homers with a good average, though, you know, and a good on base. I think teams, guys who go the other way. I mean, we dealt with it. The Rangers, we had the most shifts against us. Well, one, because we had the most left-handers in our lineup every day, right? So even guys like Shin-Soo Choo, whose power is to the opposite field, mm-hmm. and he lives in, as a left-handed hitter, he lives in left center, they would still shift him because with two strikes, it's still hard. You still try to put the ball in play, and you end up grounding out to the pull side, but it's not on purpose. But even his strength, and it wasn't easy for him because the pitching is so – you can't just flick the ball over there if you've never done it. Like, the pitching is pretty tough with the two-seamers in the mid-90s. Cutters, sinkers, you know, the hard curveballs, guys commanding that stuff. So the other thing is, if you take a power hitter and, you know, they shift and you actually got to go the other way, what happens is the defense actually, when you talk to them, wins. Because a single, the guy's not going to steal second, steal third, so his job is to try and get an extra base hit. That doesn't necessarily mean a homer. But if a guy's never done it, it's hard for guys who haven't done stuff in the minor leagues or their career to get them to do it in the big leagues when winning matters and you're facing the pitching you're facing. It's mm-hmm. incredibly tough. Mm-hmm. So you have to try to ingrain it in them in the minor leagues so that when they get there, it doesn't mean you don't work on it in the big leagues, right? It's just that it's a lot tougher because guys get frustrated. So I'm a left-handed power hitter. They got the shift on. Okay, I'm going to go the other way, right? And a guy throws a fastball down the middle. I miss it. I get jammed to the left fielder, right? On a pitch where I felt I could have thought I hit a double, a homer to center field. So as a hitter, you get frustrated, and you're like, you know what? I'm out on that because you feel like you didn't go to your strength.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's The shift is tough, man. The shift for me is not necessarily to the pull side, what they do. It's when they put those guys right up the middle.
Yeah.
Those balls that used to be – that's the hard part, right? Because we train players to hit up the middle.
Sure.
So it's not the pull side so much that really I get frustrated about when a guy – if the guy hits a line drive up the middle and you're like, yes. And the guy's standing right there and you're like, what are we – you know, where am I supposed to go with it? Am I supposed to shoot it down the third base line? Because you're training yourself to hit the ball up the middle in the gap. So that's the most frustrating one for me is when those guys are standing up the middle because those used to be hits. Those were guaranteed hits, right? And over the last couple of years, they're not up the middle. So it's hectic out there, man. And it's the hitters get frustrated and they carry it to their at-bats, but you know, it's that you're so you're just trying to teach guys to use the whole field, but also, you know, you got these big monster guys to where, you know, are they going to make money or are they helping a team win by hitting singles to the opposite field or falls off the fence? So that's something that has to be an organizational sit down and talk of what we want out of our players. But, you know, from the player side too, they get totally frustrated that when they do make an out, it's like a kid you're trying to get to bunt. Even though he's fast mm-hmm. and he makes an out and now he doesn't want to bunt no more.
So, right.
You know, it's frustrating and it's frustrating for the player as well. So it's something that you continually practice and you talk about. But you know, those line drives to right field, you know, we had Joey Gallo line out to short right field. There's a guy standing in front of the right. Those are hits. Like those used to be line drives in the outfield. There's a guy standing there now, four outfielders. So it's hard enough just to move the ball around in BP and you work on it. No luck to the game with the pitching they have now.
Well, absolutely. And when you said bunting, the first thing image came into my mind was first and second, Anthony Rizzo crashing and getting a bunt, throwing the guy out of third.
Yeah.
The guy thinking, you know, yeah, why should awesome. I bunt? Right. He's awesome at that. And, you know, the other part of the game, you know, is you hear a lot is, make an adjustment. Talk to our coaches a little bit about what that means.
I think it's facing the pitcher you have. Like, you know, sometimes pitchers have the hitter's number. Sometimes certain hitters have pitcher's numbers. Like we have, you know, Elvis Andrus in Cleveland was hitting over 500 in his career. It doesn't matter who's pitching, Kluber, Clevinger. I mean, he owns the Cleveland staff for his whole career. It's such a high confidence thing. And then there's other teams you face where you just don't feel comfortable in the backs. The batter's eye may be different. The distance from home to the dugout is different. It throws hitters off. But, you know, making adjustments are, how does this guy keep getting me out? and he keeps getting me out with breaking balls in the dirt. You know, certain hitters will go up there looking for the breaking ball in the dirt subconsciously instead of just going, okay, I'm just going to give him, you can't cover the whole plate in every pitch. So, okay, this guy's beating me middle of the way. You know what? I'm just going to give him middle of the way today and see what happens. Can he command it for a strike? And I'm going to try to look for something middle in. Maybe he misses middle of the plate. Or, you know, this guy keeps throwing first pitch breaking balls to me and I'm constantly 0-1. Screw it. Today I'm going to get up there. I'm going to look for a first pitch breaking ball. Right? I'm going to look. I'm going to try to stay through the middle of the field. I'm going to say start it at me. So making adjustments is just, it's learning. By watching the game, I think a lot of the players, like, we lose sight. They're so consumed with themselves. You know, we're all guilty of it, right? We have a thing called, well, I'm talking to you on my iPhone, right? I as in me. Yeah. I have my iPad, right? So it's my swing. It's my at bat. Everything is me and I. And we all do it, even as grown-ups. So it's not just the kids, right? We're constantly on my iPhone all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's getting them to watch the game and not worry about my swing. So I can make adjustments by watching the game and not constantly, if I'm worried about my swing constantly during the game, I'm not going to make adjustments on the pitches I swung at or the pitcher I'm facing that day.
You're listening to Anthony Iapozzi, the Major League Baseball Chicago Cubs hitting coach. You can check him out on Twitter at Anthony Iapozzi, Iapoce. Anthony, you know, we're coming down to the end here, and an area I wanted to cover, because a lot of coaches struggle at this, including myself, and players do too. You know, you see some great hitters get into slumps. You know, and all of a sudden they're 0 for, you know, 15 or 18. And I know it becomes a possibly mental thing too. What's some of the things that you could recommend when you start to see that, or, you know, to stop it as early as possible? Are there things coaches can do or players can do to help, you know, help themselves?
Yeah, it's one, it's encouragement, and it's stay, you know, one of the big things we say, stay the course, you know, and the process word has been thrown out a lot over the last couple of years, but there's a reason why it's true, you know, sticking with your routine. Guys want to change stuff, but I think you start to see it first. Like, a slump is a work created by probably newspapers back in the 20s or 30s when a guy didn't get a hit. And, you know, for me, it doesn't, I don't believe in it. You know, I think it starts where a guy's hitting the ball extremely hard and he makes out, you know, then he starts trying to press. He starts trying to do too much. Now his swing starts changing because of that, because of anxiety. Now he's 0-4. Now he's thinking about the 0-4s. Now he's hunting. He's hunting the hit. Now he's pressed too much. Now he's not mixing in his walks. Next thing you know, he's 0-20. Now he's thinking about it. Now he's batting seventh. And it's just a steamroll effect. So what you try to remind them of, the better players, they sustain success longer, right? So everybody has been hot in their career, whether for a week, a month. You know, you're just unconscious. You're hitting 400 for the week. You're hitting balls out of the yard. How do you sustain that success for longer periods of time more than eliminating slumps, right? Because I have to think about the success that I had. What was I doing? What was I thinking about? What was my routine like? You know, was I in the weight room? What was I eating? Was I healthy? Was I getting sleep? All these things affect being able not hitting the ball and having prolonged non-success. So I got to learn, you throw words like success. Hey, you're the most successful for this period of time. This is what you were thinking. You were loose. You were enjoying the day, because when guys aren't hitting, they're not enjoying the day at all. The food stinks. Everything's bad. The cage is bad. The lights are bad, and they just become negative without even knowing it. And when they're hitting good, they could be at the worst field, the worst stadium, the worst spread, and it could be the best thing that ever happened to them. It's incredible when you get hits how your life is so positive, and when you don't, it's just negative. So it's constantly, it is, right? You know,
everybody's trying to help you too. Yep.
No doubt. And that ends up backfiring, right? Hey, have this person talk to him. Have this person talk to him. Hey,
your buddy's texting you, telling you to do this, right?
Right. And right. In today's game, the players have it so much hard because, you know, everybody watches the game. Hey, your front side's pulling off. Now your high school coach is texting, your college coach, your hitting guy in the offseason, your dad, your mom, your brother. Like, it's learning how to tune out the noise because everybody's trying to help. So then you start doing it. You go from feeling good to not feeling good to trying everything. and then going back to actually trying nothing, going back to what you were doing and believing in it. And it's just, there it is. Do less, right? So it's just learning, the guys who learn that, like understanding that it's a game of failure, and that players feel like they're letting, one, the team down, so they press more, they let themselves down because they work so hard. They let their family down because of the commitment their family has made. All this plays and the guys not getting hit. So it's kind of to remind them of the success. Have them write stuff down. This is what I was thinking when I was doing good. This is what I was feeling in the cage. This is what I was doing. So they always have something to go back to. And it ain't easy because baseball is the only sport and hitting is the only thing you do every single day. So there's no way you're going to be constantly successful every day, 4 or 5 at bats. But it's, how do I fight through that and stay positive? And that is my daily routine throughout the day. The best players I've seen are just ferocious with their routine when they walk in, from the time they eat lunch to their weight room to the training room to their video to their cage to their bank. They're just ferocious with that stuff. And baseball can get boring. The process could get boring. But those who master and love it, those are the guys who end up on top and sustain success longer.
Excellent. And finally, Anthony, last question. Then what we do is open it up in case, because we could talk about everything we talked about is a topic and a show in itself. But something maybe that I missed that you really wanted to mention to coaches and players and parents, that'll be like the ending for you. But first of all, just the last question. What does Anthony Iaposi do during games in a dugout?
I am the cheerleader. Come on, Chris. Come on, Riz. No, you're watching. You know, you're watching when they get started. Are they on time? You're looking at them on deck. You're looking at them walk to the plate. You're watching the hitter's mannerisms more than anything throughout the day. You're watching the feel of the dugout. What's the pulse like in there? What's the pulse of the hitters? The hitters will come up to you, throughout the game. Maybe you see something like, hey, where was that pitch in the zone? Or they'll ask, the players will ask you, can you see where the catches or pitches are, because you could have video making adjustments throughout the game. So you're just being available to them, right? It's a player's game. Right. And once the game starts, the preparation, all that stuff, is you're just getting them to trust everything. And your biggest thing is when the relievers come in is getting the iPads ready. We have iPads in the dugout, which is awesome because it shows the pitches and stuff like that. Just maybe see some action and some breaks so they can, and getting the information ready for them when the relievers come in, which is bigger than ever nowadays. So other than that, you're just trying to give as many high fives as you can for scoring as many runs as you can, getting the players ready in the dugout, and just kind of watching their pre-pitch routines.
All right, and final minute to the show. Wish we had more time with Anthony Iaposi, Cubs Major League hitting coach. Anthony, 1 minute, anything you want to tell our audience, coaches, players, parents around the world and in the U.S. that we may have not talked about that you felt was important?
It's just a reminder that hitting is hard. And if it was easy, everybody would be successful at it. Be super patient with your players or with your siblings when you're working with them. Really have them talk it out on what they want. And the better off we are, make them accountable for what they do and not constantly telling them what they're doing wrong. Try to find some positives in there. Again, hitting is very, very, very hard. It's very difficult. And you see really good major league players chase pitches in the dirt. You see them make outs. Don't just look at all the great stuff that these players do, the homers and all that. There's a ton of work that goes into it. And if the player really loves what he's doing and he wants to work on it every day, then that's what he needs to do or she needs to do to be the best, not only hitter, but the best player they can be. It's a work every single day of what you love to do.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, my friend, Anthony Iaposi, Cubs hitting coach.
All right, man.
Thanks, buddy. We'll see you with the Cubs, and we'll wish you the best this year, and I'll be watching you.
Yeah. All right, Pete. Thank you. See you soon, brother.
All right. That was Anthony Iaposi. Thank you, everybody. This is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and I will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.